Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo LaPorte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, April 27th. Butter and Eggs Day, baby! Episode 973. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Rackspace, the open cloud company. At Rackspace, build what you want, where you want, how you want it. All backed by their world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Download the open cloud at rackspace.com/open. And by ShareFile from Citrix. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely. Try ShareFile free today. For a 30-day free trial, go to ShareFile.com. Click the radio microphone and enter Tech Guy. And by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, visit Hover.com/Tech Guy and use the offer code Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo LaPorte here, the Tech Guy. And it's time to talk computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A, outside the U.S. And we have many, many callers from all over the world. You can use Skype if you want to do that. It's toll free in the U.S., so that means Skype will be toll free call. Or any voice over the internet. You will be speaking to a new voice, however, when you call, and I want to introduce our new call screener. We've changed the system. This is going to be interesting. We've changed the system. Hello, HH. Heather Heyman is joining us. Hi, Heather.
Hi, LL.
It's LL and HH. Heather was a call screener for 11 years for Dr. Dean Adele, so I figured she knows how to take technical calls. We're going to have fun.
I know how to pick up the phone anyway.
It'll be really nice to have a call screener sitting across from me so we can see each other. And I think you're going to notice a very big improvement in sound quality on the calls. We're using a new system, and I got to thank the folks at Telos and Joe Talbot who've been working like crazy for the last 2 weeks to make this work. It's called a Telos VX, and it's kind of an interesting setup here. We have a PBX in the basement that's an open source program called Asterix, and that so it's really a computer running a PBX operating system. I know a lot of you use Asterix as in businesses and so forth. It's kind of an interesting solution, open source. And then I can't remember the Telepacific. I think Telepacific is the VoIP provider. So when you call 8888-ASK-LEO, it goes in through Telepacific over the internets, I think, to the Asterix box, and then the Asterix box puts it onto the Telos VX, and Heather puts you on the air, and wow. You'll hear when we get to the calls. I think the sound quality is going to be so great. So you are going to call that number, and you are going to be heard clearly and loudly throughout the entire world on the Tech Guy program. I left a kind of hanging Chad on a topic last week. HTC One. I love this phone. It's so we've got a couple of very hot new phones on the market. The Samsung Galaxy S4, which is a little delayed like the HTC One was, will be out in the next few weeks on all four of the big U.S. carriers. The HTC One is now out on AT&T, T-Mobile, I think Verizon and Sprint following soon. And I am blown away by the build quality of the HTC One. I think I told you this last week. It's a beautiful phone. I really like the functionality. I like everything about it. But I was a little concerned because the unit I bought from AT&T had terrible battery life. In some cases, I couldn't get through the afternoon, let alone the day. So, and I mentioned this, but I said, well, maybe it's this phone. So we got another one from AT&T, which I've been using for the week, and it's the same. Now, so what it means is, and you remember these dark old days when you had to kind of turn off radios and pay attention to the screen brightness and things like that. With a little loving care, this thing can get through the day. but it is, and a lot of people are reporting better results than I'm getting. So I think it may also be where I am. You know, one of the things that can kill battery life, and you've probably noticed this, if you accidentally leave the phone on in the plane, a 4-hour flight will kill a phone because it's hunting for antennas. And that can kill it. Now, I live in Northern California in Petaluma, which is a little farm community. And I have a feeling that part of the issue here is that the AT&T's 4G and LTE are kind of weak here. And the phone is spending a lot of time looking for signal. And that could be killing it. It is absolutely the case that if you put it in airplane mode, it goes and goes and goes. So I can use it with Wi-Fi and airplane mode. And plenty of battery life. So I have to think it's the radio, the phone radio. So just so you know, in some areas, you won't have any trouble because, you know, especially if you're in a city, you're going to be close to an LTE tower and you probably won't have any of this problem. So just a note, I wanted to follow up on that. Still love the phone. Man, do I like that phone. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number if you've got a question about smartphones. I've ordered a Galaxy S4. It will be arriving, I hope, someday soon. They're delayed a little bit. Parts shortages, you know. Still waiting for my Google glasses. Lots of people starting to get them now. Google, you know about this? You must by now because a lot of attention on CNN and other places. Google and others, many others, are thinking that the next big thing in portable and wearable, in portable computing will be wearable computers. So, Apple's widely rumored to be making an iWatch. Google has started putting out developer versions of this Google Glass, which are, they're not glasses exactly, they're glasses frames. You can snap in sunglasses, and I guess later you'll be able to snap in prescription glasses. But it's a frame, and over your right or left, one of your eyebrows, there's a lump where there is a prism and a little screen that you can look into. And it looks like a 25-inch screen, about arm's length away, they say, that you can look at what's going on. And in the future, there's a New York Times app. You'll be able to get news updates. You could take pictures with it now. That's where what we see mostly is pictures taken with it. In fact, if you look through Twitter, Facebook, or particularly Google+, their social network, for the hashtag through glass, you'll see a lot of pictures. It's an interesting product. I'm not convinced, but you're going to start seeing a lot of people wearing them. A lot of issues about privacy, right? There are even legislators looking at laws against wearing Google Glass while, for instance, driving. Yeah, that's probably not a good thing. But Scientific American published an article saying Google is not going to be the only player. Lots of people looking at these. The real question is, do you want them? Is this something you want? 8888, ask Leo, let me know. Meanwhile, get ready for this. Congress is starting to look at laws preventing you from using any kind of technology in the car. And this, I'm not surprised. Because what the last stat I saw was 3,000 people a year die while texting in the car. It is clearly a problem. It's not just texting, though. Let's face it. How many people put their makeup on, brush their teeth, eat hamburgers, dial the radio, anything that takes your attention away from what you're doing, driving a 2-ton vehicle at 60 miles an hour. We ought to be. The problem is we're complacent. We're not scared enough. It's so fun when I watch my kids, when they learn to drive, they were terrified, as they should be. Oh my gosh, I'm driving a very large vehicle. At very high speed, I could die. But how quickly we forget, isn't it amazing? How quickly we get kind of used to it. So the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has released what they call voluntary guidelines, but Congress is looking at making them more than voluntary. And I have to think this is going to be a big fight because we want to do this stuff. We want to wear our Google Glass. The NHTSA guidelines, which have been in the works for a year and a half, are based on that study you might have seen over safety and distracted driving. It'll be phased in over the next 3 years, giving the automakers time to adjust. Here's what they're proposing. What do you think? Disabling manual text entry while the car's moving. Disabling video-based entertainment and video phone calls while the car's moving. Prohibiting the display of text messages, social media, or web pages while the car's in motion or in gear. You know, those new Tesla electric vehicles, they have 17-inch screens right there in front of the driver. And, of course, what do they display? Facebook, tweets, all that stuff. The objective is, according to the TSA, to keep the driver's eyes off the road for no more than 2 seconds at a time, 12 seconds total. What do you think? Good idea or bad? 8888, ask Leah. Tech Guy Show brought to you today by Rackspace.com. Rackspace is something that I really believe in, and they believe in, a supporter of open source software. They call it the Open Cloud. Of course, it's a cloud company. Rackspace provides cloud services for companies big and large, big and small. What they do that's a little different perhaps than other cloud companies is they don't use proprietary technology. They use OpenStack, which they helped found with NASA, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Rackspace now runs the world's largest open cloud. Why is open important? Because you're not locked in. Of course, some companies want it to be a proprietary solution, so you can't move. You can't. It's too expensive and complicated to leave. Not Rackspace. Rackspace makes sure you have the freedom, as in free software, to move your apps, your codes, your websites between multiple OpenStack-based clouds, public or private, on-premises or hosted. Open is better, especially if it's your data and your app and your website. Find out more about Rackspace. In fact, you can download the Open Cloud today, free, rackspace.com/open. Build what you want, where you want, how you want it, all backed by Rackspace's world-renowned fanatical support. Try it today. Rackspace.com/open. We thank Rackspace for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Isn't that nice to have a advertiser like Rackspace? It just makes me feel good. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. You know, I as a parent of teenagers, actually my daughter's 21 now, but my son's 18, and it's terrifying to see them go out on the road and they have their cell phones with them. And I know no matter what I say. And by the way, we're in a state, California, where it's a significant fine if you are holding your phone while you drive. What is the fine, Lisa? It's like $400
or $200. $200?
Something like that. It's enough to kind of discourage you, except it doesn't, because they're teenagers. Nothing discourages them. They don't think anything bad could ever happen to them. And I see it all the time. But, you know, I also see a lot of grown-ups.
Yeah.
It's illegal to hold a phone to your ear and be talking on it. And I see it all the time. And when I really see it and get scared is when I'm crossing the street. And I see some... Yeah, I'm talking to you. when I'm crossing the street and I'm looking at a guy coming in the car and I'm going through the crosswalk where legally they, you know, and I just see him on the phone. I go, I'm going to die now because he has a very important call going on. So it's $360 because you have to throw in court fees, says Effendon. Sounds like he knows.
Court fees.
Yeah, when you go to court on this kind of stuff, they ding you for court fees as much as anything else. So there's clearly a disincentive, you know, it's pretty clear. Don't do this. And yet I just think, you know, I tell my kids, do not pick up the phone, do not touch the phone, turn off the phone. It wouldn't be bad to have some sort of technological capability. And there are certainly apps for Android and iPhone that can, you know, because the phone knows it's moving, that will prevent texting. I don't know how well those work. I'll have to try them. Illuminati in our chat room says, as a motorcycle rider, I know all about the idiots and their phones. Because you see them as you're driving. And, now, Web8408 asks a good question. What's wrong with a Bluetooth headset? And this is what, you know, I've had the conversation. Remember having dinner with the CEO of Ford, Alan Mulally, about a year and a half ago. Walt Mossberg of the Wall Street Journal was there. And Walt said, and quite rightly, there is a drumbeat in America about distracted driving. And what are you going to do, Ford, when Congress mandates no more of this electronics in your car? Because Ford is in the forefront. They're really putting a lot of electronics in the cars. What are you going to do? And Ford's point of view, because look, they got to get their customers happy after they got to sell cars, but at the same time they don't want to be they don't want to have to violate the law, so they have to adhere to the law. So what Ford is saying, and maybe it's true, is, well, we've done a lot of testing and we found cognitively that you, as long as your hands are on the wheel and your eyes are on the road, you're not looking away, you can do other things. You can have a conversation or listen to a radio or listen to an audiobook. You can do that. You have plenty of cognitive reserve to continue driving safely. So Ford's position, I'm sure all the automakers feel the same way, is a Bluetooth hands-free is fine. And yes, in the state of California, the law is not against talking on the phone. It's against holding the phone. But that's not what the NHTSA is saying. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is saying no to pretty much everything. They basically want to turn off the radios. It's kind of unclear how they feel about Bluetooth. I have a feeling they're not going to say no to that. But they don't want you to take your eyes off the screen. They certainly don't want you to read anything. Text messages, social media, or web pages. They do not obviously want you to text. But I've seen studies that say when you're on the phone, hands-free or not, you're about as good as a drunk driver. I've seen the studies. You're not, and I think about it. I've had that experience where you get distracted. I drove 12 miles in the wrong direction a night ago because somebody called me with an urgent call while I was driving, and I forgot to make the right turn, and I just kept going, and I looked up after the end of the call, and here I am somewhere else. So I can vouch for it. You're not fully cognizant of what's going on when you're on the phone. 8888, Ask Leo. Let's talk about it. Our first call. Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, here we go. Let's see if it works. The Telos VX. Our first call of the day. Pushing the button. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lewis in Hollywood, welcome. Lewis, can you hear me? Wait, what do I have to do? Now I have to push this button? Who did Leo? I take? Oh, it's Wayne. I'm sorry. Hi, Wayne. Oh. No, now it's Lewis.
Leo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Oh, you sound good. Listen how loud and clear that is. Go ahead.
So much better than it was before.
I think so. And we don't get. And when I push the button, you don't get a big chunk anymore. That's what sometimes people are thrown by. We give it a pleasant chime.
Leo, I wanted to ask you about privacy issues and Google Glass. And I'll tell you specifically why I ask is there was an interview with your little buddy Robert Scoble this week.
Who wore glass for 2 weeks. He's doing his review right now.
That's right. And he admitted to walking into over 20 men's rooms wearing them. which is creepy and a little disturbing, not unlike Scoble himself.
Yes, that sounds like Robert right there. Well, okay, here's the thing. I think we don't have any etiquette yet for this.
Yeah.
Because it's not existed before. But I think that very rapidly, things like you take it off when you go in a private space, a locker room, a men's room, a woman's room, you take it off. You don't leave the glass on. Now, what if they're your spectacles?
That's right.
I think there's very reasonable concern about Google Glass and glasses, you know, because these things have cameras, video and still cameras. And now here's what everybody at Google is saying. Well, that's why we made it a very visible gesture to take a picture. You either have to swipe your temple or say, Google Glass, take picture. And there's a loud click created by the glasses when you take the picture. But how long before that's turned off, disabled?
And how long before it starts doing video? And I think that you need to maybe make it like a studio camera. Have a red light on it. Let people know.
They may do that. Yeah, they may do. You know, How long before you get punched in the nose if you do that?
That's right.
I mean, society will, I think society will respond to this if people are going around with Google Glass. But I agree. The real problem is this is brand new. We have no – and how many things have we seen thanks to technology that are brand new? We have no mores for it. I don't like – what I really don't like – I mean, there's that. But what worries me more – is the notion that you're just not paying attention in general. You're, you're going down the street, and you're not looking at the person you're talking to. You're looking over their shoulder as you read the newspaper. That kind of almost bothers me more.
Yeah. Also, how if it starts providing the kind of information they're talking about, where you run in to see someone and you don't remember them, it does facial recognition. Before you're shaking their hands, you're reading the information about them, and that's going to.
I like that because I'm an old man. Hey, Lewis, how are you? How are the kids, Ethel and Joey? How's the wife, Lisa? Oh, I see it's her birthday next. Well, you don't say that. You say, I remember it's her birthday next week. And then as you're walking your way, you say, Google Glass, order flowers for Lisa. I think it's interesting. I don't mind that. And by the way, Google has turned off facial recognition and other products it makes that can do that. So they may be sensitive to it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Say hello to the H-bomb. Heather H., who's our new call screener. When you call in, that's who you'll be talking to. She's faboo. I'm so happy about it. Also here right now, our home theater guy. Scott Wilkinson. It's getting a little crowded in the studio today. It's kind of like that Marx Brothers movie in the stateroom, and people keep showing up. Hi, Scott. Hi. How are you?
Hey, Leo. Doing great. Hi, Heather. Welcome.
Yeah, it's nice to have her. She is. Yeah. You'll meet her when you come here and do the show in September. She's just fabulous.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yep. Yep. So she's going to get used to being on camera when she doesn't know it. For those who are listening on the radio, we also do a video stream at twit.tv, and that's kind of the behind-the-scenes stream. And, you know, you see what's really going on.
You see stuff.
You see stuff. Scott is the editorial director at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com. He's also a columnist at Home Theater, Secrets of Home Theater and Hi-Fi at hometheaterhi-fi.com, and joins us every week to talk about home theater.
And there's always lots to talk about.
There's lots to talk about. You know what's interesting? The drumbeat about Apple doing a television set seems to be fading, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And I have no idea what's going to happen there. We did hear this week that Amazon is planning to put out a set-top streamer box, a Roku or an Apple TV. Yeah, kind of a Roku. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I watch Amazon a lot of on-demand from Amazon. For instance, I'm a big fan of the TV show Justified. And I can get it for free because I'm an Amazon Prime subscriber. Amazon Prime streams it for free, all four seasons. That's really great, and there's nowhere else I can do that. So, but my set-top box, the Roku, has all of those.
It's already got Amazon.
It's already got it, so I don't know if I need an Amazon.
I'm not sure either. I don't know what the point really is.
Well, they control the experience. Same reason the Kindle Fire, for instance. It's nothing you can't do on any other tablet, but they... It's that portal to Amazon. Yeah, I saw that. Right. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question from Jamie Sanchez about plasmas, wondering whether or not to buy one of the Panasonic ST60, the current 2013, their sort of value but really high performance plasma.
Everybody last year, every reviewer I read agreed the VT was the Panasonic Viera VT was the TV to get.
Yep.
And I bought the little brother, the GT, very happy with it.
Yes.
Very happy. Well, you saw it. You calibrated it.
I calibrated
beautiful
it.
Beautiful
TV. Beautiful.
The ST is the next one down. And you save each time a few hundred dollars. What is the ST missing that the VT and GT have?
THX certification probably is the main thing.
Okay. But it's probably the same panel, right?
They use much the same panel, if not exactly the same panel. The ST60 is getting rave reviews from the early reviews that we've seen.
And this is the new 2013 model.
Correct.
Now, and aren't they doing a new one?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. They have a new flagship, a new top of the line called the ZT60.
Mm.
And that thing is being touted as a Kuro killer.
Kuro being the legendary Pioneer model that which Pioneer stopped making, that everybody
says. They stopped making 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah. Now, I have one. I have a Kuro because I couldn't bear to give it up. And most video files feel the same way. If they're going to have a flat panel, that's the one to have.
By the way, these
are all... It's 4-year-old technology.
These are all plasmas we're talking about. Notice.
Correct.
These are not LCDs.
Correct. And LCDs are by far the more popular choice among consumers. They sell... I don't know, 10 to 1 over plasma, something like that. I think plasmas have like 11% of the market share.
Wow.
And the reason for
why not? Why not bigger? Because we, you and I both agree, the best.
Plasma is the better picture. Yeah. I agree. Why is that? Well, because LCDs are brighter, a lot brighter. And so when you walk into a showroom and you see this bank of this wall of TVs, right? The LCDs all just blare at you.
They do.
And
they
the
jump
plasmas
out.
Yeah. Tend to kind of recede into the background as being, and people, I've got some friends who did this. They went into the store and they looked around. I had suggested buying a plasma and they said, no, we got an LCD because it looked better in the store. And I said, no, don't do it because you don't live in a store. People don't live on the showroom.
I just bought an inexpensive Vizio. My mom was visiting. I wanted to have a TV in her room. I got a 42, I think, Vizio. Very inexpensive. LCD, mm-hmm. LED backlit. Yeah. It looks great.
I'm sure it does.
There's nothing wrong with LCD.
No, there isn't.
We're talking a small difference that a video file would notice.
Well, the primary differences are if you go off axis, if you're not dead center of the screen, an LCD tends to look washed out. The colors shift. It just doesn't look very good. But if it's a bedroom TV and, like, you know, if it's your mom watching TV in bed and she's directly on axis looking straight at the TV from the center, it's going to look fine. The other big problem with LCD, though, is what's called motion blur. And things in motion, if you watch a lot of sports or things that have fast motion, things look blurrier. Things in motion, I should say, look blurrier on an LCD than they do on a plasma. And they've come up with different ways to compensate for that, which have their own sets of problems. So LCDs put these Band-Aids on certain problems that they have inherently, which plasmas don't have in the first place. But the problem, the main problem is that LCDs grab your attention in the showroom floor, and that's why they sell 10 to 1 over plasmas. Why Panasonic... there have been rumors floating around now, and we've got conflicting information from Panasonic itself about whether or not they're getting out of the plasma business because they're losing money.
So, to answer this guy's question, he wants to buy the 2013, and you're not saying he should wait for the ZT.
Well, if he's got the money for the ZT, sure.
ZT's more expensive.
The ZT's expensive. It comes in a 60 and a 65 or a 70. And they're over $4,000 list. So they're expensive. They're not nearly as expensive as the Pioneer Kuro was or the Sharp Elite LCD, which is the best LCD in the market. But that's $7,000-$8,000. The ST represents an incredible value. The 60-inch is probably well under $2,000, probably closer to one.
So
it's beautiful.
So if you have a budget, which everybody does, you would say the Panasonic Viera ST 50, 60, or 65 is the way to go. Maybe they don't make a 65.
Correct. The ST 60 is 60. The current line.
That's it.
And you can get them in a 50-inch size and a 60 and a 65-inch size. And they're going to be more expensive as you go up in size. But it's just an incredible value, and it just looks so great. I only recommend that you at the very least, go into the menu system and go to the picture mode and pick the movie mode or the cinema mode. Right. I forget what Panasonic calls it.
Or get a pro calibrator come in and fix it for you I did. So what you do is you put up your buddy Scott Wilkinson.
That's right.
And then he'll sit there and he'll fix it all up for you. It does look much better, by the way. I don't know if anybody notices, but I do. It really looks a lot better.
Yeah. It's not as in your face, but it's much more comfortable to look at when it's calibrated. It may not be quite as bright.
When will, for those of us who want the best of the best, the ZT65 be available?
ZT60, they're saying May.
May. Soon.
Yeah.
Next month.
Soon. Now, there's a retailer next month.
Best Buy,
called
I think. What?
I was going to say, there's a retailer in Scarsdale, New York called Value Electronics. And every year they hold a shootout or a face-off between the best plasma, the best TVs that are out there.
And last year they picked the VT50.
The Panasonic VT50. This year they've got the ZT60, the new 2013 flagship. I think they've put a VT60 in there too. The VT line carried over to this year.
Okay.
Along with the Sharp. So I can't wait to hear the result of that. I'm going to be talking about it on the podcast as soon as we get the results.
The podcast is Mondays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, twit.tv. You can download all of his Home Theater Geek podcasts after the fact at twit.tv/HTG. Scott Wilkinson, Home Theater Guru. Thank you so very much. We'll see you next week.
You bet.
Miss H-Bomb, you got a call for me? You ready with something?
Yeah. I thought Tom in Riverside would be good real quick because he was talking about what we talked about earlier about cars and texting and all that.
Okay, Tom, Riverside, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom. Okay, I pressed the button. Oh, I know what I have to do. Hi, Tom. It's a little more complicated than it used to be. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. I wanted to make a comment on this, the transportation and the problem with the texting and so on. It's really spilled over into distraction of any kind, right, while you're driving. And I'm wondering, since you're the tech guy, it seems way overdue that sensors like laser rangefinders and proximities, motion sensors, could be installed that would apply the brakes, pump the brakes, if they detect that you're moving too quick to stop with an object in front of you, and that would prevent a god-awful lot of accidents and people being killed in crosswalks and so on. I wonder why that's not being implemented by the Department of Transportation.
Well, it's a great question, Tom, because what you're essentially talking about is autonomous vehicles that drive themselves. And they totally exist. You're seeing that kind of capability already. A number of companies make lane assist. So if you drift out of the lane, what it's got is, believe it or not, some of them just have cameras in the bumpers. But there are others that are using a technology called LIDAR that gives you a full imaging of what's going on around the car. And they will do exactly the kinds of things you're talking about. It can warn you that you're going out of the lane. They have adaptive cruise control. Some of the new Fords have adaptive cruise control where they're monitoring cars ahead of you with the LIDAR. And if you get too close, the cruise control slows down. In fact, putting the brakes on, absolutely possible. The issue is it scares the heck out of people, doesn't it? The car drives itself. And I have asked people like Alan Mulally, who, by the way, has some good experience in this kind of stuff. He designed the 777 cockpits for Boeing when he was at Boeing. And he told me that people want to drive. They want to drive their cars. And so he's reluctant to take that away. I think that's just their kind of position right now. I think that and I keep saying this, come on, Alan, in the back, you've got a skunk work somewhere. Out there in the back at Dearborn, where you're working on automotive technology that allows cars to drive themselves. You know who is? We know it very well, is Google. The Google self-driving cars have driven hundreds of thousands of miles without an accident. In fact, the only accident one of those self-driving cars has had is when the human, and they always have a human without his hands on the wheel but sitting in the driver's seat, when the human intervened and caused an accident. The cars themselves are perfect. What held up this autonomous self-driving cars for so long was we had the wrong idea. I don't know if you remember the conversations 10, 15 years ago, but everybody thought we'd have to modify the roadbed, that we'd have to put sensors in the roads, that we'd have to rebuild America's highway infrastructure for this to work. Turns out, no. Technology continues to leapfrog forward, and now with LIDAR, and if you look at the Google cars, they have a big bump on the hood, on the roof, that's a LIDAR, it's kind of radar, that does 3D imaging of everything around the car. The car knows faster and better than any human could exactly what its situation is. It knows if it's near a collision, it knows if there's a car near it from behind, from the side, in front. The car works perfectly. And, you know, that's with one autonomous vehicle among a bunch of unpredictable humans. If they were all autonomous self-driving cars, you'd never have an accident. Unless the systems fail. And of course, people are very nervous about that. Alan is being a little coy because when he worked at Boeing, one of the things that they put into the 777 and other Boeings is, of course, self-flying airplanes. And if you ever fly, you can't tell if there's a human driving that plane or not. But in fact, it's part of their regular use of the autopilots. They're much more than autopilots these days. But I'm told commercial pilots routinely let the plane land itself. Now, if a plane can land itself safely, if you can trust 300 people to an autonomous plane, I think we can trust ourselves to a car. I think that's going to happen. I think that's going to happen. But it's more a cultural thing. It's a societal thing. It's us getting used to the idea that we're not driving. How would you feel? Just think about it. And I've been in autonomous vehicles. I think it was Chevrolet had some autonomous city vehicles, urban vehicles, at the Consumer Electronics Show a couple of years ago. And you get in. Imagine this. A car pulls up. There's nobody in it. I get squirrely. You know, on the monorail in Las Vegas, there's nobody driving. I get squirrely on that, and it's on a rail. So car pulls up. You get in. The door closes behind you, and it drives off. And it's just you. You're not touching anything. There aren't even any controls. And it takes you where you want to go, and you get out. Would that make you a little queasy at first? So what's going to happen, I think, is exactly what you were talking about. Slowly over time, Tom, they're going to add things like, slow down if you're about to hit something. Put on the brakes. Avoid going out of the lane. These cars that have this this lane change technology, a number of things will happen. The car will auto-steer. It'll pre-tension the seatbelts because it's worried you're going to have an accident. And all this stuff happens automatically. I think they're just slowly working their way into it. CR1 in our chat room says, I don't trust elevators unless there's a human operator. We got used to that, right? But for a long time, there were elevator operators even when they didn't need them. Because people probably, I don't remember this, but I guess people were a little worried. You mean there's nobody to tell it what floor to go to? Which floor would you like to go to, sir? It took us a little while, but we got used to it. I think it's just a matter of time. And I do think it will be very controversial when it happens. There are other advantages to it. I've talked to a number of experts in autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars. And one of the things that there are so many advantages that are unpredictable. For instance, a self-driving car can kind of eliminate car ownership. One of the big wastes in the world in terms of natural resources is that we all own cars, multiple cars. But how much of the time that you have a car, is it sitting idle? And how much are you driving it? Most of the time it's idle. That's a lot of metal and plastic. That's a lot of stuff. Tons of it sitting in your driveway. Self-driving cars could eliminate, this is another controversial topic, private ownership. What if you just had a car when you needed it? So you enter into your smartphone, I need a car to get me to work at 9 o'clock. Car shows up at 8:55. You get in, you get to work. Car leaves and goes, picks and drives somebody else up. You don't own it. Even better, I want to go on a camping vacation. I need an RV. Well, if you own an RV 99% of the time, it's sitting in your driveway. What if you say, I want to go to the Poconos? Little car comes, picks you up, drives you to the Poconos, where your RV is waiting. You get in the RV, it drives around. When you're done, the little car comes back, drives you home. Somebody else uses the RV. All of this would save us huge amounts of natural resources because we wouldn't have to build a car per person in this country. I think that in many ways, and by the way, it's no accident that the car sharing service in San Francisco and a couple of other cities, Zipcar, just got purchased by Avis. It's no accident. A lot of people see this as the future, that there is a future in this kind of technology. And I think automotive autonomous self-driving cars make a lot of sense. We've seen technology change the world in so many ways. This is where another place it's about to. And so this conversation about distracted driving, that makes perfect sense. Here's the solution. Text all you want. Let the car drive. It does a better job anyway. A much better job. No more DUIs. No more kids, plowing into roadsides because they had to answer a text. Just think about it. Well, hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Computers and internet by trade. Give me a ring. Actually, not really. I don't make a living on it. I just cover it. Give me a ring and let me know what you think. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. And for the first time, I've been doing this show since 2004. For the first time since 2004, when you call that number, you'll get us. And the wonderful Heather, who is answering the phones, Heather H., H-bomb, she calls herself. And this is new. This is great for me. I mean, I love having you in studio, and it's wonderful. So we were talking about autonomous self-driving cars. And you said you have, what, a truck driver?
Yeah, I could tell he was on the freeway right away from picking up the call and hearing the ambient noise. So we've got Dan in Tulsa saying, we have the technology. Your truck won't make you sue, but it will drive itself.
Well, that's probably a good thing. Dan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thank you, Heather. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Yeah, I hear it. Are you on one of those on those Blue Parrot headphones, headsets?
Yes, sir. That's what I'm talking to you right now. I got an iPhone 5 and a Blue Parrot headset. Seems to work pretty good.
That's what all the truckers use, the Blue Parrot B250X. Amazing.
What the model is.
Yeah, because there's a lot of noise in the background, and it's got noise canceling. Well, thank you for calling. Keep your eye on the road. What can I do for you, Dan?
I'm losing connection now.
Yeah, we're losing the connection. You were saying, though, that the trucks have a lot of this self-driving capability already.
Yes. The truck I have has the Vorad in the front. It's got a lane system on the wheel, and it's got a system in the some kind of tells when the trailer is approaching the situation where it might roll over. And all those things tell the computer to apply the brake to first they defuel the engine, and as I doubt it applies the brakes, the jake brakes, the engine brake, and then it will apply the air brakes down to about 80% of the air brake.
Wow. And now you're a professional driver. Do you find that insulting that the truck drives itself?
I love it. I love it. I can use it. I can get behind someone who's on a high, going about the speed I want to. I can set my cruise control and get behind them, set the distance I want to be from them. I just go right along behind them. I don't have to worry about it.
And it's a lot safer, right? Let me ask you, have you had any incidents where you feel like the self-driving features didn't do the right thing?
Well, it's not really self-driving, but what it does is it just...
It's assist. What they call it is driver assist.
Right. If someone cuts in front of me and it's too close and the sensor sees it, it will bring me to a sudden deceleration. It'll throw you into the seatbelt, you know, wow. the chest belt. So some guys have complained that they'll lock up the brakes. So it won't do that because we've got to...
There are anti-lock brakes. It's smart. I mean, that's a really good example.
Hold on.
When anti-lock brakes came out, people might have said, oh, no, I'm not going to let the car pump the brakes. I could pump them perfectly well. No, you can't. Drivers, real humans, lock the brakes 9 times out of 10. They jam on the brakes, the wheels lock, and they go into a skid, and they have an accident. Anti-lock brakes are, in effect, an autonomous feature. They pump the brake for you faster than you could. Hey, I really appreciate the call. I think that's very interesting. You know, there's a debate in airplane design between Boeing and the way the Boeing jets are designed. I think Boeing sells primarily to United, so it's the United Pilots Union that really has the influence here. And they say, we want to fly. We want to fly these planes. And the Airbus planes, which have, in most cases, will override the pilots in certain situations. They'll say, no, that's a mistake. You're going to stall the jet. You're going to cause a problem. And the pilots' unions don't like that. On the other hand, I think you make a strong case that it's safer. You don't get because pilots make errors. Humans make errors. We're human. But as long as you design the machine properly and you test it properly, it makes sense. Now, if you're, what was that? We saw that movie Flight. What was his name? Denzel Washington. Now, if you're Denzel Washington and you need to fly the plane upside down for a period of time, I don't think the autonomous systems will let you do that. So you might have to turn those off. That was pretty cool. That was good. See, humans sometimes can be creative in ways that machines can't be. And that's something that machines kind of lack. Let's go to line six. Vincent in Rancho somewhere. We don't have enough room on here. Rancho Mirage, Rancho Viejo. Which ranch? Rancho Santa Margarita?
We're in Rancho Cucamonga.
See, there's too many ranchos in the world. Hey, how you doing, Vincent? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
I just want, you know, while I have this chance before I get going, I just want to say I appreciate and thank you because I've been listening to the show for a long time and I've taken your advice and a number of times, and it's always worked. And I just want to just say I just appreciate you.
Well, I'm a human. I make mistakes, but thank you.
Well,
when we get the self-driving, Leo, you're going to love it. Never makes a mistake. What? What can I do for you, Vincent?
I got an interesting thing, and I just want to know how to deal with it, more or less to get your reaction from. So I'm a business, and I have a Google Places page, and my business dropped off, like, next to nothing. And I thought, you know, gosh, it must be, you know, I'll get a new haircut or something. And I just found out that there's been 2 years now, and I never knew it, a problem with service area businesses when Google activated Google Plus and migrated the data from Google Maps, a lot of businesses were deleted.
Kidding me.
Oh, check this out. I found an article written by Google that says we're copying to it. It's a software problem. It wasn't malicious. We're working on it. But as today, we don't know how to fix it, and there's a good chance it'll never be fixed. There's nothing you guys did wrong, and sorry. So I called up Google yesterday. I had to Google a Google to get a Google number, you know, because they're not out there. And I talked to a guy from Google Maps yesterday.
I'm amazed you got a human. Google, it's, you know, pretty.
It was hard.
Yeah.
I devoted the day because I'm desperate. I make my living like this. And so anyway, I talked to this guy. He sent me a reply in the email saying the same thing. We're sorry. There's no fix for it. Good luck.
It sounds like they're not going to fix it either. So you're what's called a service area business. That means you don't, people don't walk in the door.
Correct. I'm a contractor. I work out of my house.
So it's very important that you be listed on Google Maps. But what Google's saying is it doesn't matter where you're located because there's no foot traffic.
Correct. So if someone were to Google, say, find my service in Burbank, for instance, all the businesses in Burbank will be listed. If I lived in Burbank, I'd be invisible to the.
Wow, you don't even, so that's important. So a Google search that has a location on it, you don't show up.
100% no. And they say that. So I'm not guessing it. I was thinking it, and they nailed it when I read this, you know, it's the way, you know what it feels like? It feels like God's crushing me under his boot. Like I'm.
Yeah, no, if you're not in Google search results, you don't exist on the internet.
Yeah, so I called up AdWords, and they say, we're really not going to get really 100% effectiveness, even if you give us money, because this is still ongoing. So if you want to give us money, we're grateful, but it ain't going to go far.
Now, a number of people are saying, well, it's a free service. No, you don't. I disagree. I think Vincent's right. And the reason is, and Google has a higher responsibility because that's how people find stuff. And if Google doesn't do the job it's supposed to do, then people like Vincent are out of business. So I don't think it's something to fool around with. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Am I still on?
Yeah, because I can't put you on hold.
Oh, boy.
I have to figure out how to. Vincent, I'm very sympathetic. Now, this, by the way, is something new that I could never do before when we were in break. I continue to talk
to
Vincent.
Money these days. We're all trying to
save money. And I love that. And so you're still on our live stream and you're still on the podcast. And it's a really interesting problem because you're at the mercy of Google in this case.
If you Google the error message I get saying, we do not support this location, that's the string. You Google it and you get all these articles. You find out how many thousands of people it's affecting. And you know, all the different times Google says sorry.
That is frustrating as hell. And I can tell you, I have my own frustrations with Google. You know, they pull our videos off and so forth, and are sometimes not responsive. I don't know. And by the way, I did the search that you recommended, and you're absolutely right. There's a ton of people reporting these problems. I wonder if Danny Sullivan at Search Engine Land has covered this story. Because he has Google's ear.
I didn't really expect a solution. I'm just frustrated.
Yeah.
You know, it's a disastrous effect on my finances. I'm going out of business because people can't find me, and I'm just a little bit passionate about it. So I didn't expect anything.
I understand. I'm completely sympathetic. It's horrible. That's horrible. And I you know, maybe we can, by getting on the radio, rattle a cage, and somebody at Google will hear this and say, we ought to fix that.
There you go.
It sounds like, to be honest, at this point, it is not a bug. It was a conscious decision by Google that, well, if this place doesn't do business in a location, we're not going to look include it in our location database.
They have compliance guidelines, and I've been found to be in compliance. They went through my website, and they go, there's no problem here.
Yeah, so I don't know. No, he's still on.
Yeah. I can say that anyway.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's your fault. I don't blame you. I know that, you know, that can sometimes happen where,
if one of your chat room or something finds an answer, how can I keep updated?
We'll put it in the show notes. James DeRuvo will put it in the show notes. Josh, keep this in mind. This is a conversation we should continue to have. I agree. Yeah.
You know what? What's your show notes URL?
I haven't mentioned it. TechGuyLabs.com, and you'll be on there. Do you have a website? That might be one solution, to have a website.
I do have a website, and I've heard that it's very nice. I can give it to you now, or you want me to...
Yeah, give it to me.
It's DandyWest.com, and it's spelled different. It's D-A-N-D-E West.
All right.
.com.
That's your name, Dandy West.
No, that's not my name. That's the business.
Okay. I think what I would do to help this a little bit is make sure that the website mentions your location prominently, and probably the best place for it to be would be in the title of the page. So there's a title tag. Oh, we just killed your website, by the way. There's a title page, a title tag in your webpage. Make sure that that says the town that you want to be found in. Because then, at least, if a Google search with that town name will show up as a keyword, and it should help show up in the search.
There was one of the little articles, I'll have to give it some thought because one of the compliance issues was that right there.
Well, you can't have too much crap in the tags, but Google pays attention to page titles, and the page title should be appropriate. It should say Dandy West Contracting in Rancho, whatever. And that's fine. That's legal. That's the way to do it. Hey, I got to run. Thank you. I'm sorry, Vincent. Jeez.
Thank you, Leo.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Hey! Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Uh-huh. 8888 Ask Leo. So, I continue to talk after the break, through the break with Vincent, and... one solution. Now, this is clearly Google is at fault here. And this is really the problem when one company becomes dominant in search, which Google is. Everything they do, even the slightest little change to how they do things, can really make a cause a problem for businesses. In this case, Vincent has a contracting business. And you know, when you search in Google, you may not even know this is happening. But if the browser knows where you are, that's why sometimes you'll see a little pop-up saying, Chrome would like to know where you are. Is that okay? Safari would like to know where you are. Do you mind? Internet Explorer would like to post you. So when you do the search, Google can query the browser. Say, where is he? Contracting. And it will show you contractors local to you. Even more important, if you type contracting and then Rancho Cucamonga, you're telling Google explicitly, I want to see contractors in Rancho Cucamonga. And what Vince is saying is, I don't show up. Because... Google doesn't treat me as a place. I have a Google Places listing, but it doesn't treat me as a place because I don't take walk-in business. I'm not a brick-and-mortar store, and so it's not going to list me in the location listings. My suggestion, strong suggestion, is to do a little what we call SEO. Now, there's SEO and there's SEO. There's snake oil and there's real. SEO stands for search engine optimization, and it's really just being aware of how search engines work and making sure that you give the search engine the information it needs to do the right job. And one of the things you want to make sure the search engine knows is where you are. One of the most important things Google pays attention to is the title of the window, the title of the page. You know, when you're in a browser and you're on a website, the window of the browser has the name of the website in it. Have you ever noticed that? That name you can specify in your HTML tags. It's in the title tag. And it's really important that you use that information properly. You know, it shouldn't just be the name of the page. It should probably, in Vincent's case, be his company's Dan DeWest. It should be Dan DeWest Contractor in Rancho Cucamonga. That information should be in the title of the page. That will be a signal to Google. That's one of the keywords you search for. So that should help. You probably can do this in other ways. Now, I asked Vincent about that, and he said, well, I'm also nervous because Google has webmaster guidelines about what not to do because you can get delisted if you're too aggressive in the meta tag arena. And that's true. You don't want to fool Google. You want to help Google. And really, that's the decision. That's the choice. And Google, if it feels like you're trying to fool it, you know, don't put the name Britney Spears in your meta tags if you're a website for contractors. People do that, hoping to, you know, get picked up by other searches. No, don't do that. But if you use intelligence in your keywords are ignored, meta tags are ignored. The title tag is not. You know who does? There is a guy at Google, Matt Cutts, friend of mine, really great guy, who does webmaster videos in which he talks about this: how to make your web page show up appropriately well in Google, not how to trick Google. He works for Google. In fact, his job at Google is fighting sites, spammy sites that try to trick Google. So he's telling you what Google's saying. He's giving you the official word from Google. This is what you should do to make sure you show up appropriately. And I am sure that having the word Rancho Cucamonga on your page, in your content, on your page title, is not only something you should do, but something Google won't mind. If it's helping people find contractors in Rancho Cucamonga, you want that to work. And I feel bad. And this is the problem with Google. They have a lot of power. And you can say, and when we do all the time, hey, you know, it's a free service. You get what you pay for. But when it comes to search, that may be true of Google Docs. That may be true of Google Plus. That may be true of Google Voice, all of these great free services Google offers. But when it comes to search, no, that's different because of the power they wield. If you are not in Google, you don't exist on the internet. I know there's Bing, but most people use Google. If you can't be Googled, you don't exist on the internet. 8888, Ask Leo, that's the number. Now let's see, I'm going to try this. We're going to press the next button, and we're going to get Norm in Upland. Hi, Norm, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Wow, it worked.
Hey, I'm playing the Call of Duty games, the Black Ops and Modern Warfare on a Sony Vaio with an i7 core.
What prestige? What prestige are you?
I'm sorry.
What prestige are you? I don't know what that means either, but I was told that's what I should have said. I think it has to do with what
NVIDIA GeForce graphics.
Yeah,
and I'm running on Windows 7. So when I'm playing a game, either online or solo. I've been playing online for a couple years, and I've been playing games a long time. I've been playing like some of the original games. But anyway, my computer will all of a sudden the screen will go blank, and then the computer shuts down.
Yeah, that's nice. And it happens when you're playing games, right?
Yes.
It's very simple. It's overheating.
Okay, that's what. That's what I thought it was.
It gets too hot. The computer shuts down to protect itself.
Okay. And I could feel the heat coming off of it.
Yeah.
I got me a dual fan cooling tray.
It's a laptop.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
See, the problem is, not much you can do on a laptop. If it's a desktop, you could make sure the fans are working, make sure the airflow is clear, that you don't have dust in there. But you can't open it. I mean, you can't do that in a laptop. It's no user serviceable parts inside. Has this done this from day one with this Fio, or has it just started doing it?
Well, when I was playing the games, solo, when I first got the computer, it wasn't doing it. But when I started playing online, yeah, I started doing it then.
That could be a coincidence, but it could also be that because you're playing online, now all of a sudden the Ethernet chip is heating up more, and just a little bit more heat, and the whole thing collapses.
Yeah, that was kind of my thought. But you check the event recorder, and it doesn't say it's doing anything. I've tested, it's working within parameters according to the diagnostics and everything.
Yeah.
Everything's built into the motherboard.
What do you do? You make sure that the case doesn't have dust or anything blocking the fans. You know what can happen? Of course, fans can die, and then all of a sudden you don't have the cooling properties you had before. You were smart to get the laptop cooling tray because you put the laptop on that. It has fans in it, and it blows. And that really can make a big difference. But if it's not fixing it, then you probably have some serious overheating. One thing that can happen, and it's not something you can fix on a laptop, the thermal paste that makes the heat conductor between the fan on the processor and the processor itself, if that's misapplied or dried out or not working, then that means the fan is not connected to the processor physically as well as it ought to be, and that can cause the problem. It's very hard to, it's an issue on a laptop. Laptops do get hot. In fact, the way they're designed, they're probably very close to their tolerance limit anyway. So it wouldn't take much to put it a degree higher and then kill the whole thing, And I think that's probably what's happened, unfortunately. You could try to disassemble it. That's the best I can say. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy podcast brought to you by ShareFile.com. And literally, I think, there's one way you say brought to you by, as in an advertiser brings you. We actually bring you the show via ShareFile.com. ShareFile is secure file transfer built for business. Flow of information when you're in business is critical, right? But you've heard me say, don't send attachments. It's unsafe. It's insecure. And you get bounce backs. Not with ShareFile. ShareFile is the way to share files. The commercials, a lot of the audio that you hear on the show, I use ShareFile to send to the radio stations. It's worked out really well. I was using a kind of more consumery solution. I won't name names, but it just was horrible. Partly because one of the radio stations kept deleting the files. Not with ShareFile. You never lose control of the files. Up to 10 gigabytes in size. Integrates right into your daily routine, even from your mobile device. I love that. I have ShareFile on my phone. So if I go home, as I did yesterday, and forgot to send a file to a station, I don't have to come back in. I just launch ShareFile on my phone, access the ShareFile store. All the files that I'm using are there, my shared database, and I just send it along. It's very cool. It changes the way you work. They've got an Outlook plugin that does make it look like email, but it's not. You're sending secure links. Secure in other ways, too. You say how many times that file can be downloaded. You say who has access to it. You say when it expires. ShareFile.com. You can try it right now. Do me a favor. This is a little complicated. Don't click that green button that says start your free trial. Go up to the top of the page where it says radio listeners. Click here. That's for you. That's where you get our deal. Click that microphone at the top and use the offer code one word tech guy, TECHGUY. They ask what industry you're in because ShareFile works in so many industries, can be customized for individual industries. Of course, medicine, where they're HIPAA compliant, but also nonprofits, photography, music. I share photos this way all the time. Accounting, advertising. ShareFile.com. Click that radio microphone right at the top to get that radio listener deal. And use our offer code Tech Guy, and thank them for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Johnny Jett is the travel guy. He joins us every week to talk about his travels and to help you get better travel deals and better travel experiences online. Hey, Johnny.
How are you, Leo?
Great view here for everybody watching. I could tell that you, well, okay, now remember, this is a game we like to play with Johnny. Where in the world is Johnny Jett? First of all, you're in a room with a chandelier, so that's pretty good.
It's not a bad place. Right?
And then if I go to your Facebook page, this is the view out of the window from your hotel room. You're clearly in France. I think I see the Eiffel Tower peeking over the roof there. You must be in Paris.
You got it.
Wow. Not only that, I'm going to tell you where you are in Paris.
All right, let's hear it.
Because you're in a very fancy district. I can tell.
You got that right.
I think you're near the... I think you're very near the Tuileries. Let's see. I don't know.
I'm a little bit away from.
You're farther away because I see the Eiffel Tower looks pretty close. Are you in the eighth? Oh, you're near the Champ de Mars.
Next to the Champs-Élysées.
Wow.
I'm actually at the Four Seasons George the Cinq.
George Cinq. That's the hotel. Holy cow.
And actually, on the website, we're giving away a two-night stay at the Four Seasons in Toronto, including a suite and dinner and two spa treatments.
Wow. JohnnyJett.com is the website. That's a great place to follow Johnny's travels. The current post is 3 meals, 3 countries, 1 day.
That was a couple days ago.
Holy cow. On the Riviera. Yeah, wow.
I was in Monaco. You know, Monaco is only 1.25 square miles. And I didn't even realize it. My wife told me. She's like, do you realize we had breakfast in Monaco, lunch in Italy, because we took the train to Italy, and then dinner in France. And it was all within a 16-mile radius.
And you didn't even plan it. It just happened.
No, I mean, we planned on going to Italy.
No, but I mean, like, you didn't say, hey, let's have 3 meals in 3 countries. It just happened.
Yeah.
Wow.
When I was like, I got to write a post about it. That is so cool.
Isn't that awesome? Yes. So what are we talking about?
Well, we got a couple of things we could talk about. One is, you know, I downloaded a couple currency apps for my phone, which, you know, I think is really handy when you travel overseas. And I don't think we've ever spoken about that, have we?
No, we should talk about it. And incidentally, this is a good time to go to Europe because I think the euro has fallen quite a bit. It's pretty affordable, right?
I just learned what it is right now, actually, with my currency app. I took out 100 euros just now, and it was 130 U.S. dollars.
So it's 1.3, which is a very good exchange rate for the euro.
That's a great rate right now.
Well, I'll tell you one way to do it, I know, is to do it in Google. If you Google, like, 100 euros, Google has a currency calculator that's up to date. It'll just tell you the amount right on Google. But maybe you're on a smartphone, and it's not easy to Google.
You can do everything on Google.
Well, what's cool is Google actually recognizes that you might be asking what 100 euros is worth, and it gives you a kind of a special card with up-to-date, not only up-to-date exchange rate, but drop-downs where you can change to other currencies, and even a graph over the last 5 years of the currency as the price has gone up and down. And in fact, the euro has been lower, but only in a few different times. It's pretty good. So what do you use? Now, are you on an iPhone or an Android phone?
For international travel, I have a BlackBerry.
BlackBerry.
It's because it's the best for international travel because I'm grandfathered in with T-Mobile, and it costs me $19.99 extra a month.
Oh.
And when I land, I can download my emails right away.
My wife's
on an iPhone. We were in Norway last summer. My bill was $20 extra. Hers was $1,400 for the week. And this is not uncommon. This is a whole other subject.
We do talk about this, and I strongly encourage you, if you're doing international travel, you call your carrier and you let them know, and they'll tell you what their international data plans are. Do not use international data roaming. It will kill you. That's what happened to Natalie.
Next week, we'll talk about some stuff for that. Actually, one of my friends, their friend got charged $140,000.
By the way, you can call the phone company and say, you know, I am not paying that. And they'll knock it down to $100,000 pretty quick.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
For the currency apps, I use one's called Currency App.
Okay.
And it's free. And the other one is XE. X is an X-ray, E is an Edward.
Now, these are on BlackBerry.
No, actually, I use this for the iPhone.
The iPhone. Okay.
So, you know, I use my wife's iPhone, and we just use the Wi-Fi in the room, and we do all this stuff.
That's a good tip, too, is whenever you can, use the Wi-Fi in the room. I even use the Wi-Fi to download maps before I head out, so I won't be using data. And Google Maps will let you do that, which is nice.
And especially here in France, in every restaurant we go to for lunch or dinner, you can ask for a Wi-Fi code, and they'll give it to you.
So everywhere has Wi-Fi. That's nice.
Yeah, especially here.
So currency is available on iPhone, Android, and even if you have a Palm Pre, WebOS. So that's nice. That's pretty cool.
And the other one's Xe.
You know what? It's so funny that you should mention these two because I've used them both. I have used them both. Xe is also an exchange company. They do this for...
Yeah, currency converter, yeah.
Yeah, for yeah.
And again, it's important when people travel internationally. You know, I know people call me up all the time, say, should I go to the bank before I go and get, you know, some money in the local currency? I say no. I always say make sure you have, you know, get a really good credit card. Also, make sure you call your bank before you leave and tell them that you're going out of the country, which countries, and make sure your PIN is 4 digits.
Yes.
And then and try and find out which ones their banking partners so you don't get charged. For example, I use Bank of America. They charge me $5 every time I go to a foreign ATM company, unless I use one of their partners. And here in Paris, I can use BNP for free.
Oh, that's really good to know.
So they have it right on their website. You can Google it. Actually, I have it somewhere on my site too. But
I really like it's so convenient using an ATM in a foreign country rather than going to the airport currency exchange or, as you said, going to the bank before you leave, because it's really convenient. But I might be paying through the nose for that ATM.
For sure. And also make sure your credit cards, you know, don't charge a foreign transaction fee. So Capital One is a great credit card.
Because most do. Capital One does not. Oh, that's good to know.
The American Express Platinum card does not, but American Express is not widely accepted here in Europe, I'm sad to say. And the Visa Sapphire, Chase Sapphire card doesn't have an exchange.
Okay, Capital One, Visa, Chase Sapphire. And then you mentioned, and this is actually a different topic, but a very important one, to arrange for a 4-digit PIN on your credit card. Why is that?
Well, because, you know, they ask you what your PIN is. And a lot of times, for my credit card? Yeah, sometimes they do.
Right.
This is when you're trying to buy... you know, train tickets or something. Right. Actually, I had a problem in Monaco the other day when I was buying the tickets to go to Venice. We had to use Natalie's chip card because my credit card did not have a chip.
That's a really big problem, which I think is going to be solved soon. But for now, almost everywhere you go around the world, they have credit cards with built-in data chips. And they cannot read American credit cards because we don't have data chips in our credit cards. So in some cases, they'll let you use your credit card and then use a PIN. A 4-digit PIN.
I mean, you can always go wait in line, but usually you have to wait in line and it takes a while. If you really want to be in a hurry, it's nice to have the PIN, chip.
Yeah. It's complicated. I'm glad that, you know what, I'll tell you what, John. I'm glad it's still a little bit complicated because it's getting easier and easier and easier to travel. And there should be a little hardship.
It is. It makes you tougher.
Yeah.
It makes you smarter. It makes you think.
It's travel. It shouldn't be you just go there and you go and it's like I'm at Disneyland. It should be a little tough. In my day, you'd go to a foreign country, you'd get sick. Nobody'd speak English. Money wouldn't work. They'd all have different money. You go in 3 different countries for 3 different meals and each one has their own currency. It's all changed. It's easy. You get euros. You don't get sick anymore. They all speak English.
Yeah.
They got Mannix on the television set for crying out loud. It's just not the same as it used to be. Johnny Jet.
Plus, it keeps me employed.
Yes. It should be a little hard so that Johnny has a job. JohnnyJet.com. That's the website. We'll talk again next week. Happy travels.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We're having a lot of fun talking high tech. With our brand new call screener, H-bomb. Are you calling yourself H-bomb in the chat room, Heather? Is that the deal?
I went with it. Yeah, some friends have called me it for years. I didn't assign that to myself. I want you to know.
Who should I go to next?
Well, I was liking David in New York.
I'll say hi to David in New York. Let me. I gotta press the button here.
He's on line 6.
Line 6. David, New York. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks, Heather. Hi, David.
Oh, wait a minute. Chat room.
Thank you. What's your name in the chat room?
David Bix.
Oh, David Bix. How are you? David's a regular in our chat room. I didn't mention, by the way, I should mention this as long as you mentioned chat room. You can get into our chat room by going to our website, techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com is where all the show notes are. The video of the show after the fact, the audio of the show, so you can download it and listen as a podcast if you want, but you also can see each question and answer. And then there's a link there to the chat room. And David, you've been in our chat room for a long time. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, same here. So kind of a weird problem. I have a home theater PC that I built myself, and I use the HDMI output on it to go to my receiver. And, you know, I have it set up, you know, a certain way in the Windows 7 audio preferences, you know, to make sure that it's sending out surround sound and that the audio quality is a certain way as far as the sample rate and all that. And it keeps resetting back to the default. Seems like maybe whenever the HDMI does its re-handshaking thing or when I restart, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that just a consequence of the HDMI out, that it sees it as new every time and always resets?
Not at all. It's a so which is losing the settings? Which device is losing the settings?
The PC.
The PC.
The output settings, that it always goes...
So the,
Stereo, 16, stereo DVD quality.
Right.
Audio.
It's a problem with the PC.
Okay.
So it should remember its settings. I can't tell you how many devices I have that don't remember their settings, and it's incredibly frustrating. They go back to the default each time, and that's just a flaw in the software that came with the sound card. I don't know how easy that is to fix. Are you using the Windows mixer or the sound card's own software?
I'm using the Windows mixer. Yeah. HDMI app that came with the motherboard, so it's the Intel audio HDMI audio app.
Right. And there's no Intel software for that?
And I don't think so. I think there's just Intel software for the picture settings.
Yeah. So that's exactly what happens, is that I'm sure there is somewhere to save that setting. Probably, you know, just save it as on the hard drive as some data. But that Windows software is not doing that. And now I don't know if that's typical of the Windows sound mixer or not. Maybe it's assuming that somebody else is going to remember the AV settings. Are you using software to play? What software are you using to play back the content on the computer?
For when I'm, like, for the music that I want to have, like, the higher quality settings for, that I use XBMC. And
yeah, see, that's who should remember it. So when you launch whatever it is you're using to play the content, it should then change the settings in the mixer to be whatever it was the last time. That's who should remember it.
Well, you mean if it to Bitstream or to do the decoding on the PC's end?
Whatever's sending it out the HDMI port.
Okay.
So it's communicating with the driver. Of course, it has to. So that's the Windows interface. That's the driver. And the driver's not remembering it. Okay. You can understand why it might not. It would have different settings depending on what the source is. So maybe the driver's not supposed to remember it. But whatever the source is should automatically go, oh, yeah, the last time you used XBMC, you were using Dolby 5.1. Tell the driver, I want to be Dolby 5.1. The driver should say, okay, and it should all stay that way. So it's not unusual that programs don't remember settings, but you got to figure out who's not remembering the settings. I would say it's probably the source of the audio or video that you're sending out HDMI.
I mean, it's the Windows mixer that's always not remembering that. Always.
Well, but that's I stand corrected. I step back a little bit from what I said. I was blaming the Windows mixer, but truthfully, the Windows mixer is only picking up the audio from somebody else, right? A player.
Well, the thing is, though, I'm trying to adjust the settings so that it is doing as much of the decoding on the PC's end as possible. So, like, for example, even though I have a Dolby Digital capable receiver, because I hate, you know, the little hiccups you get from it trying to send the signal directly, like if you're going back on a DVR recording, when you go back to play again, it hiccups for like a second or two with no audio before it comes back. So I turned off exclusive mode to see, you know, in general to deal with that and see if it affected anything else. So in theory, all of that should be going on in software with the settings I have.
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, I'm going to blame the source software. I'm going to say that
Now, this happens, though, this doesn't just happen in XBMC. I mean, this also happens using Media Center.
Okay, no matter what you're playing it back with, it still gets confused.
Right. That something ends up happening.
But are you setting it in Media Center? Are you telling Media Center I want Dolby 5.1 or whatever? That's where you should set it, because otherwise it's going to...
Well, no, it's not the Dolby. It's the chat. It's the how many channels of audio that I want, and then also what's the maximum quality that it can decode, that it can send out. And it should be doing that regardless of what, you know, if it's Dolby Digital or not. Because, like I said, I don't want it to send Dolby Digital direct to the receiver. I want it to decode to Dolby Digital and software.
Ah, so you want to send a stream, a plain undecoded stream to the...
No, I want to send the already decoded stream to the receiver.
Yeah. And that, well, the decoded stream then has the information already, the Dolby 5.1 or whatever. It may be that they're fighting, to be honest with you. I'm not sure exactly where it's not working. Chat room had an interesting suggestion, and I know, David, you're in the chat room, saying that UAC sometimes prevents software from remembering settings. I don't know why that would be. And you wouldn't want to turn off UAC permanently, but maybe turn off the user access control temporarily just to see if it'll remember its settings. Oh, wow. And Padre SJ, who is just a hacker, for a priest, he's quite the hacker, says there's a hack. You use an HDMI cable with pin 19 removed. Now, this you're going to have to break out some clippers and soldering iron, which will keep Windows from changing settings whenever it detects the monitor is off. In other words, it can't see if the monitor is off, so it's not going to change the settings. HDCP will stop working as well. That seems like quite the hack. David, it's really nice to meet you. I don't know if I have an answer for this one, but it's so nice to meet you. Thank you for being in the chat room, and you are amongst the smartest people who certainly can find you an answer over time, and we'll report back. And of course, put the answer on the website at techguylabs.com. Hey, hey, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. You hear that, Heather? Do you hear the parade going by?
I do.
76 Trump.
Did you ever feel like life was a parade just passing you by? Isn't that a saying?
Well, now it literally is.
I know. I feel bad. I'm like, here you are doing this great show, and people are running out of the building to see a parade.
So, for those who are wondering what we're talking about, what is it, Veterans Day? Is it Memorial? What is it? It's Butter and Eggs Day is what it is in this little town where we are, Petaluma, which I love. I've lived here for 20 years, and I just love it. It's in the Sonoma County wine country in Northern California, about an hour north of San Francisco. But it was very famous for its dairy and its eggs, its chickens. Chicken farmers came here in the early 20th century, late 19th century, and there were this was for a long time just the place in California to get eggs. So we celebrate that each year with the Butter and Egg Day Parade. And it's a small town, relatively small, about 50,000 people. So pretty much everybody's in the parade, which means it takes a few hours. But the problem is, if everybody's in the parade, who's watching? Well, that's not a problem, because when you get to the end of the parade, you sit down in your chair. So you'll see, if you go downtown, there's a lot of empty seats. That's for people in the parade so they can go sit down after they go by. And yeah, it's a circular parade. It's cute.
I love it.
It's a really fun. Before the show, we were out there, Lisa and I were out taking pictures, because they have an event called the Cutest Little Chicken Town, where they get little kids, like 3 months old, dressed up like chickens. And their parents... Their parents bring them up on stage, and then it's like a talent competition. And I think this is cut. It must be somebody's maybe Rick Steve or somebody did a story about it, because the line was around the block. I've never seen so many people vying for Cutest Little Chicken Town. We have some pictures. We'll put them up on Facebook. So I have a challenge for my mom. My mom, 80 years old. You know, she was out here. You met her, Heather. Mm-hmm. She is pretty computer literate, has an iPad she loves. She has a laptop. By the way, I talked about that last hour. They're fine. They're safe. They're getting mailed to her. But she had on the desktop of her laptop a file called passwords.doc that had all her passwords. And that's why I had a little moment of consternation, because I thought, anybody finds this laptop, just opens it up. Oh, look, all her banking right there. So I had been converting her to LastPass, which is a password vault that I recommend everybody use. It's highly secure. She only has to remember one password now, and everything else is in the vault. In fact, LastPass will fill in the passwords. So that challenge, she's doing very well. I just want to report back. So now another challenge. She's not on Facebook. I said, Mom, why aren't you on Facebook? Well, I don't. My privacy is very important to me. I know what it really is. She doesn't want her old boyfriends looking her up. So, but I said, but Mom, you know, if you want to know what's going on with me and the kids, your grandkids, Facebook's where everything is happening these days. The challenge, and I think we're going to make this a, we'll put this as an article on the website, Tech Guy Labs, is can you create, by the way, here's some pictures on my Facebook from that Lisa took of the cutest little chicks in town. Aren't they cute? So the challenge is, can I create a Facebook account for Mom that no one can see or find her, but allows her to see what others are up to? So what would those settings be? So I'm gonna do that, and we'll report back to you tomorrow, and put an article in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Because I bet you there's more than a few people. Now, that is a cute picture. It's more than a few people who want to have a Facebook account but don't want anybody to see them. How to make a private Facebook page. Non-trivial, by the way. It can be done, but it takes a little effort. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather, who should I talk to next?
Let's talk to Jim in the UK. I believe he's been holding a while.
Well, he's on Skype. It probably didn't. But you're okay. Right. We should take it. Hi, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. It's Jim here. I'm talking about, I've got a problem with my Windows computer.
All right. By the way, it sounds so posh when you say it.
Sorry.
My window. No, don't apologize. My Windows computer. I love that.
Well, I went ahead and built a Windows computer. Never built a computer before, so I went ahead and built a...
You did it yourself.
Yeah, I've never built a computer before. So just before that, I fixed my Mac computer by changing my thermal paste on my CPU because it was overheating.
Yeah, once you've done that, you get very confident, don't you? Hey, if I could do that, I could build a computer.
Yeah, I know, because it hadn't been cleaned out for 6 years for the intake.
Well, so remember when last hour we had a laptop caller. You were on hold. You probably heard it. A laptop caller whose laptop was overheating when he played Call of Duty, and that can be a problem. The thermal paste stops being effective. That means you're not getting good connectivity between the chip, the top of the chip, and the bottom of the heatsink and the fan, and that can really cause a big problem. So that was a good way to fix that. Replace the thermal paste.
My fan as well, you see.
Yeah,
very good. Just making some sound.
So tell me about this new computer. You built a PC?
Yeah, I built a PC. I was going to buy a Mac, but then I thought, let's build a PC. So I put a 420 rad in the top of it. It's only got an i5 35K in it, and then I put just a 66T graphics card with a can't think of the motherboard. Ferrari thing.
Sounds like a very nice system. I mean, the i5 is not the top of the line, but you've got a 660 video, which is very nice. NVIDIAs are very nice. Are you a gamer? Did you build this for gaming? Or
I built it because I wanted to really start to simulation.
Flight sims, yeah. Yeah.
Flight sim.
Yeah.
And
how does it work for a flight simulator?
It's working okay, but I ran into a minor problem though. I was using a pin on it, and I forgot the master password for it, and I can't access the administrator. So currently I'm using.
So you're using Windows 8, obviously.
I'm using Windows 8. Yes, yeah. Sorry,
one of the nice things about I think it's a nice thing about Windows 8 is, you know, normally on Windows, if you have a password set, you have to log in each time with a password. But Windows 8, you can say, no, I just want to use a 4-digit PIN.
That's what I was using.
And I do that too, and it makes it fast to log in and still fairly secure.
Yeah, I forgot the password though whilst I was using the PIN.
But you remember the PIN?
No, you see, I removed the PIN.
Oh, no.
logged off, and I realized to log back in.
Well, worst case scenario, you know, you just reinstall Windows and start over. And since you built the whole thing yourself, I know you know how to do that. You've already done that once. Oh, that's funny. So you said, "Oh, I'm not going to use a PIN," and then you realized, "Oh no, what was that password?"
Well, it was I've forgotten what it was. It was really random.
No, that's good. By the way, this is where LastPass is so great. You make a password vault, and LastPass will generate truly, you know, weird random passwords, and then tell you what it is. And if you have LastPass and you put it on your smartphone as well as on your computer, a case like this, you could just look up the secure note that you saved, and say, "Oh yeah, that's the password." So that's good. And this is another reason why I like the PIN, because you're encouraged to use a strong password. You don't have to enter it all the time.
Yeah, because I used to have the XP. Where you just start up in safety mode and you...
Yeah, that was kind of a security flaw, wasn't it?
Slight
security flaw. Actually, the Mac, you can still do that. You can still wipe out the passwords if you have a system disk. You just boot from the system disk.
That's why I was thinking the system disk. So I thought... I tried to start up in safety mode with Windows 8, and it...
Doesn't work anymore.
Didn't it?
They figured it out. So there are password crackers... for Windows 8, and I haven't used these before.
I tried to use some of them, and they wouldn't work that well. So I was just wondering if you could recommend any.
Don't know off the top of my head. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I will. It's magic. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Been having some fun. We're talking to Jim. He's in the UK. Where in the UK are you, Jim?
West Midlands.
In the West Midlands, and he built his own Windows 8 computer, but then through a series of forgivable, excusable, understandable errors, forgot to log in, and he can no longer get in. Somebody in the chat room quoted a guy named Leitner saying, "All good programmers put in a back door." Is there a back door to the ostensibly secure Windows login? Well, there was... to Windows 7, and this might also work with Windows 8, although one would think that Microsoft would be aware of this backdoor and fix it. This is from the chat room and a website called How To Geek. Get this. We'll put this in the show notes. This is for Windows 7. Get this. It's hysterical. And I have a feeling, and I'll tell you why, this might not work for Windows 8. And so, first of all, you need a Windows installed disk. I presume you have one of those, Jim, because you built the computer yourself.
You
boot the Windows install disk and you select the repair option, repair your computer. It's in the lower left-hand corner. You might miss it. It's right down there. You go through until you get the option to open the command prompt. You want to select open the command prompt. Okay. And then type in a command. This is hard to believe this works. You're going to replace a file, the sticky keys file, which is part of the accessibility system on Windows, with the command prompt. So I won't give you all the details. You'll definitely want to follow this recipe from How To Geek step by step. But essentially, you're going to back up a file in the System32 folder called sethc.exe. Then copy the command executable, cmd.exe, on top of it. So you're replacing sticky keys with command. Now reboot. And what will happen, of course, is when it boots up, you'll get the password and you don't know it. But if you turn on sticky keys by hitting shift key 5 times, that's the accessibility command in Windows. You probably run into that by accident. You know, if you lean on the shift key for a while, suddenly sticky keys will pop up. Say, "Hey, you want me to turn on sticky keys?" Well, in this case, sticky keys won't pop up. You know what'll pop up? The command line. Now, without logging in, you've got a command line into the system. And there is a reset password command. You ready for this? net space user space. You type your username and your new password. That replaces the old password. Now you're good to go. Now that works. Is that a bizarre hole? Whether that's intentional or not, I don't know. I would suspect Microsoft, seeing that, would fix that. But maybe not. You never know. Maybe they didn't know about it. Maybe they put it there on purpose because, you know, but it is a flaw. You should not have a way of resetting a password on an operating system.
Because I know you can reset the password if you log, if you had signed in online.
Yes, and that's what I've done, by the way. I've attached my password to my Microsoft account. So that means no longer do I use a special password made up for the hardware. I log on to my Microsoft Live account as part of logging on to Windows. And that's another reason why they put that PIN thing in, because presumably people have a complex, long, and random password for their Live account. All right, here's another one, a password reset hack. You know what? I think it works on Windows 8. Holy cow. It's replacing sticky keys with command line and then using the net command, which has been around since Windows began in day one. Try that.
This is
something to keep in your hip pocket. I thank you, Jim. It's great to know you're listening in the Midlands.
Thank you very much. Have a nice show.
Does that not sound good? Does that line not sound amazing? Wow. First of all, using Skype, so that gives you a little advantage. But really, I got to give credit to the Telos VX system. We've changed our call screening system. Today's the first day we're doing it. The call screening is now local in here in the Tech Guy Labs, and we've hired the wonderful Heather H to join us. She's screening right across from me. If you've ever seen the TV show Frasier, just imagine me as Frasier, and she's Roz on the other side of the glass from me, and she's screening the calls.
But I don't have to talk to crazy people.
Heather, this is your first day. I wouldn't say that right away. Be patient.
Okay.
But then we're using a new system, which is the state of the art. This is a top of the line call screening system from Telos. They made our old system, but this is much updated. The Telos VX. I want to thank Joe Talbot at Telos, he's actually watching, and he's been troubleshooting it as we go. Yeah, we salute you, and also the folks at Tel Pacific who are providing the VoIP interface into the studios, and then it's attached to an asterisk box, which is an open source PBX down in our basement, which is handling the calls. Because you need something kind of fancy, because radio station, call-in shows use something called a hunt group. So, think about it. We got one number, but we got to get, a bunch of people on the line. I got six people right now on the line. So, Heather, this works pretty well. I think the sound quality is superb.
I got no complaints.
Yeah. Who should I talk to next?
That last call was a little high-tech.
Oh, we're going to get a little low-tech now?
A little bit.
Is my mom on the line?
No, it's not
okay.
That low-tech.
Okay.
Julie in L.A., I've seen this problem with friends in Marin County, so I'd like to know the answer myself.
Good. A little self-help here. Hi, Julie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Well, I live in a canyon in Los Angeles, and in my house, there is one little 2-foot square where if I stand with my finger in the air, I can get one bar on my cell phone.
I know that feeling.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, and pretty much all of the cell phone companies are the same in the canyon. There's not one that
nobody has good,
the others.
So there's a way to... Who's your cell phone company?
Verizon.
Okay, there's a way to do this. You want something that is generically called a femtocell, but Verizon calls it their wireless network extender. But it's a femtocell, and what it is, this is kind of interesting. I think AT&T calls it a microcell. Sprint has another name for it. What it is, it's kind of putting a cell tower in your house.
Cool.
That way you'd get better reception, wouldn't you?
I would.
So, but here's the catch. It uses your internet access. So it will connect up to your router. So you have to have internet for this to work. And then your cell works 5 bars because you're right next to the cell tower, and it's going to use your internet access to go back and forth.
I see. Is it a box or something I have to purchase?
In almost every case, they give it to you for free.
No kidding.
Well, because they don't want to lose you.
Right. Okay.
So Sprint calls it their, I can't remember. It's Sprint does a lot of them because for obvious reasons. So just call Verizon. I want a femtocell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've heard very good things about it, for, you know, from people who use them. Hey, something else I've heard very good things about is Hover.com. Are you familiar with Hover.com, our lovely sponsor? Let me find their lower third here. This is a domain name registrar. If you have a website, like twit.tv, techguylabs.com, leoville.com, you need to get the name from a registrar. And you may think, well, all registrars are the same. No. Hover is exactly what you want. I have been using Hover. I moved all my domains over. I was with a number of different other registrars, and I moved to Hover for a couple of reasons. First of all, I just like them. They have great domain name management. They don't upsell you. They don't sell servers or anything. It's domain name registration. They give you Whois privacy for free. It's part of the service because they know that you're going to want that. It is a great, let's say, when my kids were born, I got abbylaporte.com and henrylaporte.com because, you know, it'd be a great gift and that way you can have a permanent email address, that kind of thing. My mom has a permanent email address because she might want to change from Gmail to Yahoo or whatever. It's a great way to do that. If you have a website, you should have a name that's not WordPress.com, but a real name. So get your domain name here. It's very easy to do, very affordable. They will transfer existing domain names with their concierge transfer service. They do all the work for you. They have all the names, .com. A lot of the .com names are gone, though, so they also have .net, which is actually, everybody recognizes .net. I've got leolaporte.net, thank goodness. Couldn't get .com. They've got .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz, .ca, .asia, .uk, all of them, right? Loving Hover. You will love Hover, too. Great support. Not only do they have fantastic help, they have no-hold support. When you call them during business hours, you'll talk to a live person who's empowered and will help you. So try it out. We have a special address that will give you 10% off your first domain registrations. H-O-V-E-R, hover.com/techguy. Hover.com/techguy. 10% off your first domain registration. And that'll activate the Tech Guy promo code and you're in. I am a big fan. And I'm really glad to help them out because they really are. This is a company called Two Cows that is trying to reinvent businesses that are poorly implemented and really should be so much simpler. Hover.com/techguy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Those microcells, microcells, what AT&T calls them, femtocells. Kind of a neat idea. You got to get them from the carrier that you use. You do have to have high-speed internet access. They're free. If you don't get a good signal, they'll give it to you for free because they want to keep you as a customer. So if you have a place of business or a home that doesn't get good cell reception, is unusable, if you have to stand on one leg with your finger on your nose and the phone in the air, then this is a good solution. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Well, see, now we have this other thing I can do is press this arrow key, and I'll take the next caller, who is Penny in Sacramento. Hi, Penny. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. Hey, I have a HTPC home theater set up that has started to overheat pretty badly I put it in a cabinet.
Yeah. So these home theater PCs are Windows computers that are designed to be in the living room, hooked up to a big screen TV, and they run the media center and they let you watch movies and stuff. The thing is, they make these without fans a lot of times, because the last thing you want is to be sitting in your living room watching A Quiet Passage in a movie and you hear as the computer is going.
Yeah, actually, mine is a Mac Mini, but I do use it for everything.
Perfect. Oh, you're smart. You got this all wired up.
Yeah, and I'm really super happy with it. It's just that since we had a baby, we need to get everything behind glass doors.
Yes.
And protect
it. Child-proofed it.
Right. We child-proofed it to death.
Well, it's not so much whether it's in a closed cabinet as whether there's a lot of air around it in the cabinet. Is it a small, tight space that the Mini is in?
No, it's a pretty good-sized cabinet, and there are some holes that we drilled in the back to let in air and cables, but it's just not cooling it down. And I even moved, I had a Drobo in there and had to just move it to the outside, the back of the cabinet, because it would just shut down.
Yeah.
And
so it must be getting pretty hot in there if the Drobo's not liking it either.
Yeah, I installed a temperature monitor app, and it says that it's like the ambient temperature inside the Mac Mini is 109. That's kind of bad.
That's kind of hot. Yeah, the Mini has problems anyway with getting hot because it's such a compact, tight little package. And it's on its little feet, right? It's up off. There's air going underneath it as well, right?
Yeah.
Well, I hate to put a fan in there, but that would be one solution. That's going to add some noise, but it will blow air into the cabinet.
Yeah, I did that.
Oh, wow.
A USB fan, but it just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, the USB fans are pretty anemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's an interesting thing about fans. The bigger the blades, the quieter they are. So they make very quiet fans and move a lot, because they don't have to spin as fast. They move a lot of air. But they're big. They're like 8 inches in diameter. And that is a great way to do something like that. It'll move a lot of air, which is what you need to do. You need to get the cabinet temperature down. I don't know, short of packing it nice, I don't know if there's anything else you can do. You need to get air in there. And that cabinet is tight. There are, you know, they make furniture for this purpose. That actually has, you know, little fans in it and so forth. I wonder if you could maybe take the Mini out of the cabinet and just put it high up.
Yeah.
Kid's not 6 foot tall yet.
No, she's only 10 months.
And she probably isn't even climbing ladders yet. So I think you're probably all right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Is the Mini on top of other equipment?
No, it's on. There's two shelves, and there's the Mini is in there, and there's a couple of external hard drives in there. And then on the other side, there's a receiver.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat room, and I actually like this idea, although it requires buying new furniture. Brian says, in the chat room says, I have a standout AV furniture that has built-in fans. And it's designed for exactly the situation where you've got a cabinet with a lot of hot equipment. I have the same problem in my AV setup. I have a ton of little, you know, the AV receiver and all sorts of stuff. The problem is the Mini is maybe more sensitive to overheating. Mm-hmm. So Brian says these cabinets have fans. The receiver is what's really generating heat, by the way.
Yeah.
You got to get some cool air in there.
Mm-hmm. So just keep looking for bigger fans.
Yeah, or take the back off the cabinet entirely.
Yeah.
Sometimes these cabinets, depends on the cabinet, and structurally the back is keeping it from sliding sideways, falling over. But you maybe cut a bigger hole in the back. You do want, and the chat room is pointing this out as well, a fan blowing in is not as good as a fan blowing in and another fan blowing out. You want to get circulation as opposed to just inflation.
Yeah, the one that I got is a dual fan.
Oh, clever. So it sucks and blows.
Yeah, well, it comes with two fans, but right. I think it's just small.
Right, maybe it's just two. If it's USB, it's not really getting very fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Boy, you're obviously a geek. You got a Drobo, you got a Mac Mini home theater. And what software are you using? Plex? What are you using on the Mac Mini for your home theater software?
Yeah, I've been using Plex for the past couple years, and well, that's for my DVD, you know, stuff that I've ripped, and for getting an over-the-air signal, I use ITV.
I love ITV. Elgato makes that. That's for a Mac, but those are great.
Yeah.
Great. You've got a nice setup. What's your remote control? How do you control it all?
Oh, my gosh. This was the hardest part. This is the hardest thing that I've ever done. It's a Harmony One, which will work with Plex, and it will work with ITV, but you have to change activities, and I didn't want to do that.
Right.
So what I did was I made it simulate 10 Apple remotes. And now it works perfectly. Anybody can use it, but I will never do it again.
So you have a setup for each situation, and each one has its own separate remote, even though it's the same device.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's better than having eight remotes on the sofa arm, which is what I have.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I really like, and I think this is going to be the future, the new HTC One phone and a number of other new phones have, they have infrared remote control blasters. So you can actually use software on the phone to make it be a universal remote, kind of a la the Harmony. But since you always have your phone, it's a good alternative. The Galaxy S4 will be doing that when that comes out too. I'm glad to see these phones. They're really making these phones so this is the one thing you hold ever.
Well, I have a Plex app on my iPhone.
Exactly.
And it does control it great, but the problem with using any phone is that, you know, it's not instant. You know, you have to put in the passcode and
it's annoying, isn't it? Yeah.
You know, there's no, you know, touch, you know, buttons that you can just like feel.
Yeah. Somebody in the chat room suggested that you get a 10,000, no, make it 30,000 BTU air conditioner in the room and have industrial. Jim is in San Marcos, Texas. That's how he knows that.
Well, I do have a good air conditioning, system in the house.
Yeah, it's just that cabinet's not getting circulation. I think better fans, not USB fans you plug in with big blades. That's going to make the difference. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. But at this point, if you call, you'll be talking to Heather, and that's it, because this is the last segment of the show. We are wrapping things. I can't believe how fast this went. I want to thank Heather, our new call screener, for putting together a great show. You did a Marvy job.
Oh, your callers make it so easy.
Thank you. And we might have time for one or two more, so don't hang up yet. Let's say hi now, though, to Dick DiBartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer for 50 decades.
Yeah, 50 decades.
Since Moses parted the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Also a major gadget hound. Back then it was tablets. Today it's still tablets. Kind of interesting. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Hey, Dickie D.
How you doing, Leo?
I'm well.
Good.
What do you got for us today?
It's today's the parade.
Yeah. Oh, you're missing Butter and Eggs Day, dude.
I don't believe.
Can you
it.
Hear the drums in the background? Boom, 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 boom. Sounds like Mordor on parade.
You know, I picked the wrong week then to email your Chamber of Commerce because they're too busy.
They're a little busy.
I woke up. You know, you ever wake up in the middle of the night with an idea? I woke up in the middle of the night and thought there should be a Twit Appreciation Day in Petaluma. So I emailed the Chamber of Commerce and said, you brought employment, you bring tourists, and there should be some acknowledgement.
I agree. I agree. Okay. People from all over the world hear about Petaluma and our little parade because of this radio show and the other shows that I do out of this. You know, this is the Tech Guy Labs is now housed in a 18,000 square foot, it's 18,000, something like that, 17,000 square foot building that used to be a drugstore. For 60 years, it was a drugstore. I, right now, am sitting where the Beanie Babies were sold.
Really?
I swear to you. And you know how I know that? Because I used to buy my Beanie Babies here.
Wow. Wow. Yep. Yeah, you see, there should be a Twit Appreciation Day. Well, hopefully there will.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. Anyway, I have a little gadget for hound dogs. Actually, not for the hound dogs. It's for the hound dog owners.
Well, I'm a hound dog owner. Ozzy qualify as a hound dog? He is a he's a little papillon.
Hound dogette, I think it would be.
A cocktail weenie. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, don't say that in front of him.
Yeah, well,
no, he's a cute
his
dog.
His ears popped
that
up.
One cute dog.
I thought I was going to give him a song.
It's called the Bark and Activity Counter. Mm. And this is for pet owners who want to keep track of what their dogs are doing when they're not home. So it's a little
I have one of those for my teenagers, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what? If you did that with Henry, you would at the end of the day you would plug it in and it would just say he was howling from 7 p.m. till 5 a.m. in the morning. And then he slept.
I think I heard much of that howling last night, as a matter of fact.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
So the bark and activity counter.
Counter. It's from, you'll find it on the web under petsafe.net or premier.com because the one company is taking over the other company. So it's for people who worry about, was their dog barking all day and annoying the neighbors? Did the dog sleep all day? What is the dog doing all day? So they wear this on this collar. I think Ozzy's out of the picture because it's not recommended for dogs under 10 pounds.
Oh, yeah. No, he's only 7 pounds.
And then when you get home, you take this little device, plug it into your computer, and it'll print out a graph of the day, the hours of the day.
Wow.
I think it was every 10-minute period. And for most people, you'll see after you left, your dog will probably walk around a few minutes sort of saying, oh, they're gone, they're gone. Then they usually sleep. One person was saying they noticed there was a little activity around 2 p.m. and they realized that's when the mailman came. Then the dog was quiet till about 5. And then for most people, I was just reading reviews on Amazon, their dog starts getting a little active around the time they know their owners are going to come home. So they start preparing for that.
Wow.
So, but that way, and I'm lending it to a neighbor who lives above me and has a dog, a little beagle. And I hear Mickey, oh, maybe 5 minutes a day. But the neighbor above her says that the dog barks all day. And I don't think it's true. So I'm going to let her borrow the barking activity counter. And then she can have a printout saying, my dog barked for exactly 4 minutes from 4:20 to 4:24. And it keeps up to 3,000 sessions in memory. And each one of them is up to 99 minutes long. So it works on Mac or PC. It's $71. And it is the Bark and Activity Counter.
Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. You can find out there's details on this and all the other gadgets he reviews, not just for me, but for ABC TV and others. And, of course, he has a regular show on our network every Tuesday about 3 p.m., 2 p.m., I guess, Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time, twit.tv/gizwiz, if you'd like
yes,
to
yes, and just watch it. three more days to play the What the Heck Is It.
Really? Oh, the end of the month? Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Well, it looks like, you know, I'm still saying it's a Smurf towel holder, but I could be wrong. Actually, that's good news because there's 12 Mad magazines autographed by Dick for the right answer. There's 24 magazines for the wrong answer. So you really, I'm in good company.
Yeah.
A little more competition for those, though. So it all works out. Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Yes, sir.
Go back to the phones. I think I have time for maybe one more call. Heather, you have anybody in particular that you think we should talk to?
Last call. I feel like Morgan in OC touches on something that was on a few of the lines, and so she's the best caller to address this with.
Last call. Morgan in Orange County. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Morgan.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
Wonderful. Thanks for calling.
I have a friend who whose old PC died, and she bought a new Dell computer with Windows 8 about 2 months ago. And she's having all kinds of problems. And I suggested that she go back to Windows 7.
Are the problems, let me interrupt you, Morgan, are the problems that she doesn't like it or that it's, you know, it's breaking down a lot?
It's very complicated.
She just doesn't like the new user interface.
I believe that's what's going on.
She's not alone. I tried Windows 8 for 3 months. It's not now. Look, I'm fairly sophisticated. I could figure it out. I just found it confusing, and I didn't want to. I wanted to go back to Windows 7. So let me tell you, she does not need to go to Windows 7.
Uh-huh.
I'll tell you what I did. It's $5. There's a free program she could try called Classic Shell.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I like is called Start and the number 8. Start 8. It's from a company called Stardock, StarDock.com.
Uh-huh.
And it does the one thing that's going to change your life. It brings back the Start menu.
Oh, that's great.
That's the thing people have trouble with.
She's not a computer geek by a long...
But she's used Windows before.
Yes.
What we find is people who've never used Windows don't seem to have the same problem with Windows 8. But if you've used any other version of Windows, it's like, well, where's my Start menu?
Uh-huh.
So this, for $5, it puts back the Start menu. And frankly, I've been using it, and it just makes it so, it's like, ah. Now, there's still the Metro menu is still there. It doesn't go away, that, you know, that slidey menu on the front page. But it doesn't start up in that. It starts up in the desktop. I think it's a very good solution for people who are having trouble with Windows 8, and definitely cheaper than downgrading to Windows 7. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.